Reopen the hearing on House Committee on Human Services, and I reopen the hearing on House Bill 3471. Healy.
This bill requires the Department of Human Services enter into the necessary agreements to carry out the requirements of the Convention on Protection of Children and Cooperation in Respect of Intercountry Adoption. It requires that the rules adopted by DHS include minimum requirements for placement, supervision, and monitoring of a child and subject to an outgoing convention adoption in Oregon. It requires the exchange of written reports and visits to the home and with the prospective adoptive parents. There is a -1 amendment recommended, which you should have, that basically does some minor language revision. I'm sure DHS can discuss that further.
Great, thank you. Aaron, could you come up again with your panel? And I know there were other questions that the committee had, and if you could hold those for a few minutes while.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, for the record, Aaron Kelly Seal, Interim Director of the Children, Adults, and Families Division. We will, because we appreciated the opportunity to give you an overview of our international adoptions efforts, what I'm going to try and just focus on are the technical issues this bill addresses and what the amendments to do, and give you maybe a little bit more specific information around a dynamic this bill has that Senate Bill 10 does not with respect to child-specific agreements. This bill, like Senate Bill 10, they complement one each other. They require us to take the necessary steps to come into full compliance with the Hague Convention and the Intercountry Adoption Act. And one point I did want to make for this committee that I think maybe I didn't make clear enough in our conversation around Senate Bill 10 is that those laws now apply to us as a state agency irrespective of this legislation passing. So we will be moving forward to be in compliance with those federal laws because they do apply. What the bills do for us are a couple of things. One, I think clearly make a commitment in public policy to the importance of these activities happening and to the commitment of this body to the work going on within the department to ensure the safety of children and take full advantage of the protections that those federal laws and that international treaty now afford the children that we are responsible for in this state. There is also, I think, an advantage with respect to House Bill 3471 and the second part of that bill, which does require us to have child-specific agreements in place with other countries prior to placement that give us information about the kind of supervision and monitoring that will be happening once a placement has occurred, and also, in effect, a commitment from that other state agency defining clearly between us how we plan to work together in support and on behalf of that child and on the placement resource. And we have had the opportunity to have these kinds of agreements in some circumstances for some of the children, a very small number of them that we have placed previously, but we have struggled with some countries to require them. And what I believe House Bill 3471's biggest advantage is it gives us the force of law as a state agency to require those prior to a placement being made. It allows us with another country to tell them that we have a legal obligation to have that commitment from them before we can make the placement. Technically, we cannot require other countries to follow our laws, but we must follow our own law, and it does give clarity to the agency about our ability to be able to get those kinds of commitments from other countries. And if we're not able to do that, we'll obviously have to consider a different option for that child because we won't have in place what the law would require us to do. So I think there are advantages to these two bills moving forward together because they address simultaneously two issues that we are working strongly to have happened in the state for children that are being placed internationally for adoption, obviously taking full advantage of the different kinds of protections, having the U.S. State Department oversight, both of our own work and the work of another country. Country's work in parity with that central authority will enhance the work we do currently on international adoption. And in addition, having the ability ahead of time to have agreements with other countries with respect to the monitoring and oversight of children that we place there will also enhance our ability to have information from them and have the ability to respond in the event something is not going well quickly so that we can have clarity going into the conversation with that other country about what our responsibilities are as a state. The -1 amendments, Keeley suggested that we walk through. They proposed two changes to the bill that clarify language and bring the bill language into compliance with the federal laws. The changes to section 1 sub 2 are to read as amended, that will read as amended, support the federal intent. Having only one central authority in the United States, originally as written, it created the impression that Oregon should become a central authority, and that isn't actually what the federal law allows. There's one central authority for us as a country, and that is the United States State Department. So we need to have that be clear. Section 13A would be changed to read, would be amended to prevent what we think is an unintended consequence of asking DHS CAF to actually go to the other country and monitor a placement after an adoption is finalized. We don't have authority to do that work, and we believe the amendment helps minimize confusion about our responsibility and authority after an adoption is finalized. So we do strongly support the amendments to the bill as well as the bill itself. We will be available for questions, and I think I'll just leave it at that unless Beth or Gloria would like to add anything.
I have a question, Erin. So after the adoption is finalized, Oregon has no more right to be involved in that. Is that true?
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, that is correct. Once an adoption is finalized, our authority with respect to that adoption ends, whether that adoption happens in this state, in another state, or in another country.
So before the adoption is finalized, if there is a problem in another state or in another country, and Oregon is not satisfied that the follow-up is appropriate or is not good enough, then how would Oregon react to that? How would we take an active response to that?
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I think there are two issues that I believe your question's working on addressing. One is, if we are unsatisfied with the kind of interaction that we're having with another country, and the second is, if we're unsatisfied with what's happening with respect to the placement. Do I understand your questions correctly?
Yes.
So two different issues. If we have information that something is not going well in an adoptive placement, we would fully engage the other country that is obviously working with the family around a plan, I believe, to first try and identify what the issues are and whether we can make any changes in terms of our supports for that family that might allow the placement to continue. But if there are safety concerns, then we would work with the other country to end the placement. We still would have legal jurisdiction over the child, and the child would return to Oregon. Beth, want to correct me on something I just said? You can.
No, I just...
Do you want to add?
Yes, and Representative Tomei and members of the committee, I think if you consider that that an international adoption, save for the fact that it is an international adoption and a placement that we have made pending finalization in another country, as Erin has indicated, I think it's important to recognize that we still have all of the avenues that would remain to us if a child was in a pre-finalized placement in this country. Whether they, and I think you can think of it to a certain degree as though they are in another state.
Could
in
you
a placement.
Give us your name, please?
I'm sorry. For the record, I'm Beth Englander, and I'm the Adoption Program Manager for Children, Adults, and Families with the Department of Human Services. But we would have all of the same avenues still available to us for assuring the safety of that child, assuring that their needs are being met, just as though they were placed here in Oregon pending finalization or in another state. And I think the other piece that is important is that if we are unsatisfied with the response that we were getting from the child welfare agency or authority that is supervising the placement in the other country, we would now, as Erin has indicated, have the avenue of using the central authority with the Department of State to act on our behalf with the other country to help us to facilitate either an assessment of what's happening with that placement or to help us to facilitate bringing the child home back to this country.
So the State Department would be involved, and would a caseworker from Oregon go down to help facilitate either to correct the placement or to bring the child back to Oregon?
Chair Tomei and members of the committee, as has already been mentioned, we don't have an ability to actually practice social work in the other country, but we would send a worker to bring the child back so that there is some, and more than likely it would be the child's primary caseworker that is still working with the family to effect the adoption. So it would be somebody that the child would know.
Okay, thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had actually that very question, but I have a couple others also. And one of them might be related to this, and that is how long does the new country, the country where the child is living now, continue to report to Oregon?
For the record, my name is Gloria Maria Anderson, and I am the Diversity and International Affairs Manager for the Children, Adults, and Families Division of the Department of Human Services. In response to that question, Madam Chair and committee members, until the adoption is finalized, we would be requiring those reports to continue to come in.
Okay, follow up then. Mm-hmm. And then that picks up on Chair's question of what happens if there is a problem, the state becomes aware that there is a problem, then they would, I guess this is for clarification, they would work then their further action through the State Department.
Representative Boone and members of the committee, we would, although we would, what the State Department and Central Authority does for us is that prior to the Hague Convention being ratified and the United States entering into this, what we would have done is a worker and child welfare branch would be contacting a consular office in Oregon to contact, to assist us with the placement in Mexico and trying to work with a social worker. So it really was a worker here in Oregon trying to make change happen quickly in another country. Now what we have is we would do that, but in addition we would contact our central authority, Department of State, so USA, country to country in Mexico, so to their central authority in Mexico, would be reporting that there is a concern and that we need action to happen quickly. So we could actually move things much quicker and have things happen.
Yeah, thank you. And one tiny little last question, and that is, and I know I don't know if you can even answer this, but say within your purview, has this or will this new law make a difference in trafficking of children, international trafficking? And how?
Chair Tomei, Representative Boone, I don't know that we have an answer as to whether it already has achieved that goal because it just really took effect for the United States earlier, as we said, in April of 2008 for all. For us as a country, but I think the original intent really did begin around a conversation focused on the issue of trafficking.
Right, and final comment, I guess. I guess my thought is having read the most recent case about the little girl who died in Mexico recently, if this bill had been in effect and you'd have had these avenues open to you to act quicker, if you will, or however it would change that. I guess, and we don't know what the outcome would be, that's speculation, but if this process were in place, how likely is it that something like that could have gone on that long? I think it was a time factor that was surprising to so many people.
Chair Tomei, Representative Boone. The child that I think you're referring to, Adriana Cram, was killed in 2005, in June of 2005, so it was 4 years ago. And there really is a legacy, I think, that we feel very strongly she has left us as an organization, and I think these bills really culminate in taking that legacy even one step further with respect to our ability to really continue to strengthen our work and ensure the safety of children who go into other countries. I think what is very difficult about that particular case is there are several issues that I think we learned from when we did the work originally on that case. We had actually had very little experience in the issue of international adoption, and we also had a very different policy in place with respect to relatives. We did not require relatives to be certified before we placed with them, and now we do.
And so there are a variety of steps that are listed for you in the sheet that we gave you that show what we did in response to what happened in that tragedy and also then what we hope this now will do. Unfortunately, as you say, you know, my personal goal is that we can avoid any tragedy for a child, whether that's in this state, in this country, or in other countries. I'm not sure that I can ever create a system that would perfectly promise that nothing would ever happen to a child. Unfortunately, we're dealing with human beings and the lives of human beings, and things are not always perfect. But I do strongly believe that we are in a much different place 4 years later from that tragedy than we were when it occurred. And I think the likelihood of something like that happening is significantly less at this point because of the protections that we've put in place for children.
Senator Courtney is here. Senator, would you please come up and testify? I assume you're coming about this issue. And stay close, ladies.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Peter Courtney. I live at 2925 Island View Drive North here in Salem, 97303. I'm State Senator District 11. I've been running around my office trying to figure out what bill is where here because I asked to have a bill. Well, let's just go at it. When I met the Speaker and I meet regularly with the governor. We met with him, and we found out about a situation that was going to develop involving the adoption proceeding, involving a tragic situation that happened in Mexico. And I won't go into all those details because it's a very emotional situation. There may be relatives in the room, and I don't want to. It's painful enough, I'm sure, for them. I don't want to go through it. And I remember during the course of the conversation, there's all kinds of discussions, some of which, and I'm a lawyer, I could understand, some of which I couldn't. But the one thing I said is, what kind of legislation could we introduce to try to make sure this doesn't happen again, to the extent you can introduce legislation to make sure it doesn't happen again. And I happen to say, what about more home visits or family visits, or those kinds of visits that are used before you make the decisions? And I said, why, you know, and I learned the hard way, which you already know because you're all very talented in this area, much more sophisticated than I am, and the good co-chair who I was. When I found out you asked for the same bill I asked for, I said, sure, let Carolyn Tomei take the lead. That you got to go by the laws of Mexico in this case. You can't simply say that we have certain standards here and we want the same kinds of visits in Mexico. It doesn't work that way. What Mexico says goes. That's how it was explained to me. So I said, suppose I introduce a bill, and you did, that at least I think you did, because I'm trying to read this, and I don't, I'm trying to read it hurriedly, that says there has to be, we are the ones that will require a certain number of home visits. Our people here will require a certain number of home visits, and that's what we're going to live with, recognizing that I can't force those in another country. Therefore, if the home visits don't take place, somehow or other, the decision-making process in our country or in our state would be such that maybe we don't place that child. So that was the intention, and I hope that was my understanding, was the kind of language that you asked for, Chair Tomei, at least that's what I understand. That was the kind of language I wanted. And while I'm hurriedly reading this, and I'm not going to try to make noise like a lawyer, I don't know whether that's in here or not, or at least the teeth are necessary, or whether this committee and its collective and individual wisdom would even agree with that. So I am very concerned, as we all are, in this issue. I do thank you, Chair Tomei, for asking for the bill. There's another bill, as you know, Senate Bill 10, that's being heard. That bill, that's very complicated stuff on the international level. But I just wanted to do whatever we could do in the great state of Oregon to make sure that we had a child under our jurisdiction. We were making sure that child, whether it's Germany, Ireland, so you can pick on me because I'm Irish, Mexico, Canada, whatever, that our standards, to the extent we could push them, were going to be the standards we live by before the decision is made. So is that all taken care of in your bill? Is that all taken care of here this morning? And just you understand what's going on here. And I recognize a country has its laws, and our laws can't necessarily be enforced on another country, but maybe at least in terms of the final decision we will make it according to our laws to extend as much as possible as we can.
Thank you for coming, Senator. And we did have a meeting with the Judiciary Committee that heard Senate Bill 10 this morning. So I wanted this committee to understand what we are required by international law. So I think your committee in the Senate is dealing with that now, and we just started our hearing then on this bill, trying to do exactly what it was that you that you're concerned in and what we are concerned about.
So this is the vehicle, right?
This is the vehicle that deals with Oregon's... And Aaron, could you come back up again? Aaron can explain it much better than you
can. They encouraged me. Aaron Kelly said, if you would introduce legislation along those lines, at least you may remember that conversation, not to put her on the spot. So I'm running around here saying, where is the vehicle? Who, what committee's doing what? Because here we all are well-intentioned. Could it be we'd sign it? Aye, guess what? We missed.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, Mr. President, this is the vehicle, and what it does require is that prior to us making a placement that we have an agreement in place, and you are correct, the other country could say to us, we refuse to come into that kind of agreement with you, and if that occurred, what we understand this legislation would say to us is that we should not make that placement.
And Madam Chair, if I may be asked, and I assume legal counsel would tell us we have a right to do that. Because, you know, obviously there is a nexus to the other country. The child has a nexus to the other country from a legal rights standpoint. We wouldn't even be looking at the adoption there. So I assume that legally, here we go, state constitution, federal constitution, we would be allowed to do that. So I assume that that's all been fleshed out with legislative counsel, too, because sure enough, we passed this kind of law, and then we get a constitutional challenge saying, well, whoopee-doo, you cannot do that because the child's connection with the... I'm not trying to make it convoluted, you Chair Tomei. Maybe I'm making too much noise like a lawyer, but I assume that that's also going to be carefully examined by the great legal beagles that are in this building and those outside this building.
I'm sure that it is, Senator.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out what committee to go to and where the bill is. And so I'm glad I finally found where the bill is.
Aaron, do you have anything more to say in response to the Senator's
Chair Tomei, no, I think what I would say is that obviously you have authority to give direction to us as a state agency, and I believe that's what this bill does. It directs us to take certain action to safeguard and make as much information congruent have clear expectations about the information that we will receive and require of another country before we make a placement, and it allows us then to rely on this legislation when having a conversation with that country about what our laws do require of us.
And, Senator, I think even after the placement is made, the child is in a different state from Oregon or a different country, that if DHS is not satisfied with what's happening, with the kind of feedback that they want and require regarding visitation and medical reports and reports from schools, that if Oregon is not pleased with that, then Oregon then can, before the adoption is finalized, Oregon can bring the child back.
Okay. I assume, Chair Tomei, if I may be added, once the adoption is finalized, that would all cease. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. Just as is true in Oregon also, once the adoption is finalized, but DHS is...
No, I understand that, and I don't mean to make exceptions for foreign country adoption, because I don't want to get myself in an international crisis here. I won't comment further on that this time.
Thank you for coming, Senator, and thanks for your interest in this issue.
Thank you very much. I didn't mean to interrupt your testimony.
Did not interrupt. You're always welcome to come. So, shall we bring the panel back up? I know Representative Maurer has more questions.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. And actually, that little interchange or exchange was helpful, because going back to the 2005 was a different era, and I don't think the precautions that were in place a year ago were different than they were in 2005, and in my opinion, I think averted not a tragedy, but we averted a situation that could have ultimately ended in the same way. But there was a public challenge, which created a stir in state government. We reacted to that, and this is really even the next step, because your timeline explained upstairs that you know, even though 2000 the treaty was signed, isn't until March of this year that we in fact have got some solid policy guidelines to move forward, and the fact. That this is I'm actually getting a picture that this is filling a hole, that it gives the state ultimately more accountability or more responsibility in ensuring that we feel comfortable as a state that we are abiding by our own standards of care, standards of living that may not be applicable in another state. The problem with an international treaty is you're dealing between a federal government, a sovereign government, and another sovereign government, but we're a state, and we're also dealing with other states and foreign countries. Mm-hmm. And those relationships aren't direct. Those are very indirect relationships. And just because the federal entity in another country, you know, salutes smartly and says everything's fine, that doesn't mean the state in that country is anywhere close to where we think they need to be. And so this is, if you're uncomfortable and you have a cause to be uncomfortable, this bill, I'm asking this is the question, this bill would give you cause to say, no, we are not going to allow that adoption to occur, and this is why.
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, the answer to that is yes. We now will have more information going into a placement decision to really to be able to evaluate and identify whether a placement is the best and safe and is a safe resource for a child.
Okay, and I accept that. Thank you.
Representative Van Orman.
Madam Chair, I think one of the things that we're forgetting is the role of the judge in these decisions. And so that, I think, is important, that this gives the judge then some guidelines in making decisions about the welfare of the child. Is that a fair assumption?
Representative Tomei, Representative Van Orman, yes. In fact, the Hague and the Intercountry Adoption Act do have specific requirements that judges now must follow with respect to findings that they make on the record. And those findings include things like the state is in compliance with the Hague Convention and that we have received the appropriate certificates. And so now there is additional information that judges will have in front of them and be considering when they make decisions to approve adoptive placements.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A little while ago, we passed out a bill regarding relative foster care and involving the search for relatives and giving preference, et cetera. Is that same kind of application with the adoptions, whether in-state, in-country, and international?
Well, Chair Tomei, Representative Boone, yes. That policy for us is something, as we talked a little bit about earlier, that we believe is really one of the work efforts that we have underway. We have set a goal for ourselves to increase the number of children we're able to place with family from 30% to 50%, because the research shows that placements with families have several advantages to them, and this legislative body endorsed that policy last session that typically, placements with relatives are safer, they're more stable, and they also, of course, allow for more connectivity to family and to the history and culture of a child. And all of those things benefit a child longitudinally as that child grows up into a young person and into adulthood and can mean better outcomes ultimately for a child who's had the experience of either of being in foster care and maybe even adopted. I think that so the bill that you passed last session, Senate Bill 414, that does require us to make diligent efforts to place with relatives is equally applicable across borders. Our work really is child-focused and child-centered, and so it doesn't we try very hard to ensure that everything that we do, and actually it's a federal requirement, that we do not make any decision solely on the basis of geography. That's not something that we actually are permitted to do. And so I do also think what's been raised here and what I think we've also had some conversation with this committee about is that one of our distinct challenges in this area that we will continue to work our way through is that when it does come to some placements with relatives, particularly those in other countries, those are placements that although we may identify them very early in a case, when a case is happening and a child, originally almost all of our case plans say to us, you need to work to reunify this child with their parent. Parental rights are paramount, very important. We're not in a position then to make a placement in foster care in another country because it would really make it difficult for us to be making active efforts, reasonable efforts, diligent efforts, whatever the level of effort that is required, to place the child with their parent. And so we sometimes end up in a position where a child has been with a foster parent for a particular period of time who is not a relative. and we've identified a relative, perhaps in another country, perhaps in another state, and we've not been able to place with that relative earlier because of the placement plan and the return to parent obligations that we have that the judge is working with us on. So some of the cases that you hear about often that are some of the most challenging that I have had the opportunity to review involve people who have become very, very bonded with a child as a foster parent and would like to adopt that child. And then the state's obligation in law to make diligent efforts to place that child with a relative. And those are very difficult decisions that ultimately come down to a best interest determination, and those best interest determinations are incredibly hard to make when you have the conversation about relatives and the advantages that can afford that I just talked about, and the conversation about attachment and a bond that has been created between a child and a current caregiver who maybe isn't related to the child.
Any further questions from this panel? Thank you so much. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on this issue? Ms. Kroll? The two Ms. Krolls.
My name is Tasha Cram. I want to begin by thanking for the roles that you guys work in addressing the policies intended to protect our vulnerable children. When children are placed in other countries, they remain under the custodial responsibility of the state that places them, in this case, Oregon. I want to point out that while these policies have potential to protect in foreign countries, the reality is that neither the U.S. or individual states, such as Oregon, have authority to enforce their policy, law, or procedures in other countries. So the safety and well-being of these children is questionable at best, if not impossible, despite what our efforts might be. As Jim Perillo mentioned, my old state worker, at one point, I followed all Oregon in-house procedures as if I would have if I had placed your daughter in Minnesota. Yet my daughter, Adriana, placement in Mexico, despite following procedures, the state did not, and possibly in some instances, could not fulfill their responsibilities, although they were legally responsible. To ensure safety, as in this case, there are never any resources for the aggrieved of the innocent children, grandparents, their aunts, their uncles, their parents. These children are taken into custody to be protected. DHS in Oregon or other states that takes custody of a child should be held accountable. Responsibility for decisions that permanently impact, or in my daughter's case, end lives. My daughter suffered months of starvation, humiliation, and brutal beatings that eventually killed her. It is deceptive and dishonest to both families and children for DHS to promise responsible custodial care while knowing that it is impossible to fulfill those duties in out-of-country placements. The state of Oregon and the rest of America have responsibilities to their foster children, even if they place them in foreign countries. The state must acknowledge upfront its lack of contact, jurisdiction, and authority in foreign countries, limiting or disabling the state's ability to carry out its duties. My daughter Adriana's case, the state up to the present time has simply hidden in silence behind the lack of jurisdiction in an attempt to absolve itself of custodial responsibility to such kids as her that are in their custody. If international adoption is allowed to continue, the scenario will repeatedly put the U.S. and its individual states in a double bind with no escape. Adriana was in state custody, and they were responsible for her, or so you would think. But because she was placed in foster care because the adoption was not finalized, and I'd like to know what limbo that was if it wasn't foster care. Because she had been placed in foster care in Mexico, they had no jurisdiction to carry out their responsibilities to protect her. At the same time, Mexico took no responsive action for her well-being due to numerous complaints and reports due to the fact that Oregon still held responsibility for her until the completion of the adoption, which my daughter did not live to see. Oregon placed my daughter in a foster care no man's land and left her vulnerable without protection to live with severe neglect and fatal abuse. The primary responsibility for this repeatable and preventable tragedy lies with the United States and the state of Oregon that have the power to change the outcome and save innocent lives that could be potential candidates for further international adoptions in the future. That they have as candidates for further international adoption in the future. The state of Oregon, unwilling or unable to care for or protect my daughter, The state of Oregon presented an appearance of approval of international adoption care, but was unable or unwilling to care for or protect my daughter. My daughter and others in similar situations go unprotected with no one being held accountable. No one is being held accountable apart from the parents such as myself who are haunted by guilt, remorse, and self-hatred for the mistakes that I made. And not having enough coping skills to deal with them any other way. Because even though state services are available, if they don't refer you to them, you can't do what you're court ordered to do. They're hard, at least. They're hard to access on your own. The children, however, pay the biggest price. While they owe nothing to no one and have never wronged anyone, children such as my daughter are robbed first of their right to be American citizens and grow up where they're born. Many children in state care are neglected and forgotten. Blood relation means nothing as far as I'm concerned. When a child is already in a family that love her, care for her, and can financially meet her medical needs and emotional needs, where they're safe and loved, and where a family has what is really the meaning of the child's best interest in mind. Do right by these children. They're already traumatized enough, and we just keep making it worse. One of the ironies in my daughter's case, while I no longer had any parental rights or custodial rights in the state of Oregon, in Mexico my full parental rights were still intact, valid, and actionable. While Oregon and Mexico both failed to protect my defenseless child, they also neglected to communicate with either my biological family or me that I, as her biological mother, still retained full parental rights in the country they had placed her in. If this communication had been made and I had been aware of the abuse my daughter was enduring, I would have and could have intervened and protected my child in spite of Oregon and Mexico's failure to do so. The state failed me, my daughter, its citizens, its own agencies, and their commitment to the children. I believe our most vulnerable children are foster children. They are best protected in the U.S., where family violence has been illegal for many years, while in some countries, such as Mexico, they are only recently changing laws to protect women and children. Change takes time and habits are hard to break. Trust me, I know. When one grows up in an environment where they believe family violence is acceptable, how are they to know or determine where the limit is? My daughter's best interest was always to remain in America with her non-biological foster parents, a home where she had established a happy and healthy bond. This was overlooked when she was sent to live with her biological relatives in Mexico, a place she had never been, to strangers she had never met. Custodial responsibility and jurisdiction are better held together in this country. The placements within our own county, our own country, is better for the well-being of our children. I urge the state to focus its energies on better resourcing for at-risk families and children and preventative steps that they can make so they don't have to take your kids. If you're begging for help because you need insurance, give it to them. Don't just come and take their kid. You're not doing them any favors. Please give intentional oversight to ensure that required communication occurs as promised by DHS to the parents. Please focus state oversights and DHS efforts on parents who are genuinely trying to live better lives and working honestly with their caseworkers rather than punishing them or labeling them. Please utilize only responsible foster care or adoptive parents while placing children whom have already experienced relationship trauma, such as attachment and abandonment issues, during their unsettling transitions. Take good notes. Make physical checks on the children, you yourselves, not the authorities in other countries. One-on-one visits without their parents, so you can speak to them and see if there's really an issue, and then don't go tell their parents so that they get punished for it or possibly beaten. Keep your eyes open and don't block out the numerous cries that I can prove the state received for trying to get help for my daughter and did nothing. They say that there's communication between Mexico and America and all these other countries, but I still have a pack of papers this big from the prison where the woman who is breastfeeding and has custody of a child in prison after she murdered mine, until that baby's 5 years old, he will remain in prison with her. And they still haven't got any of that paperwork, because it's supposedly sealed and not accessible. Where's the communication? Where's this open line of communication that we're saying that is existing? Because it's not. If you say you're here to help the kids, it's time to do it. I want the state to have to physically check on the children that have already been placed in out of country. When I went to Mexico the first time 2 years ago to try to recover my daughter's body, unfortunately I was unsuccessful. There's a little town by where we were at. It's called Acámbaro, Guanajuato, where there was a little baby screaming, "Help me," and "Help me" in English. And there's nothing I could do because you're in a foreign country. But you know that baby's got to be from America, and there's a woman chasing him, and all you hear is a big thump. Is that kid still screaming today? Or did the state meet with attorneys like they did in my case and decide against telling the parents? How many parents are out there waiting for their kids to come look for them, that let go for the right reasons, trusting the state to do right by their children that don't even know they're dead? They're waiting for something that will never come.
Thank you, Ms. Graham.
I got one more piece. It says, I want the state to physically check. There's on the place the children they've already set for adoption. There's no excuses or inability for ignoring their safety. If we're not willing to pay for plane tickets to go check on these children personally, then we should quit sending them. Thank you for your time and attention and consideration in this process of the bill that is trying to achieve better protection to our children. I hope that with these facts, the committee has gotten some idea on how to better ensure the safety of the children of Oregon, if not the United States.
Thank you so much for your testimony, and I'm sure the whole committee extends our condolences to you and your family.
I can't let my daughter's death be in vain. To keep watching it happen, I'm tired of every time I turn on the news or read the paper, reading of another kid that was failed by the system. I was clean when I lost my daughter. I turned myself in to her pediatrician. I still owe that bill. Because I couldn't provide for my daughter and the state had denied me insurance because I was hiding from an abusive partner. I had had insurance within Washington within a certain amount of time. So instead of helping me, they took my kid. I relapsed after 2 years clean.
It was just a bunch of tricks and trades. They had intentions from the get-go. Even the foster parent, which I still talk to this day, says that they never even looked at me. I was never even considered. There was a relationship that was too close between my husband and the worker. And unfortunately, my daughter has paid the cost because she was robbed of her right to even be buried here when they buried her in Mexico, having only them being the only ones with jurisdiction. They still buried her in a foreign country.
Ms. Cram, I think you might not have told us your name at the beginning.
Tasha
Crane. Tasha Crane, and I just want to make sure that we got that in the record. Colleagues, I'll come back to you in just a second, but it's a quarter of 10. I'm hoping we have several bills that I would like to hopefully pass this morning. And I'm hoping that, is there anyone who cannot stay past 10?
I have a committee.
A committee at 10?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Okay. Then what I think we might do is take not a recess.
Could I leave these with one of you guys? These are pictures.
If you get these to Zach, that would be great.
A recess.
I don't have enough.
You want to come back to this? Or
yes, I want to come back
to today.
Yes.
Just a recess.
Recess on House Bill 3471.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Is a work session scheduled for this?
Not today.
Monday.
But it's scheduled because
yes.
Today's the last day to
yes.
schedule. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. We will have a work session on Monday. So let's see. I'm going to open up a work session on 3114.
Yeah. We'll come back.
Keely? Yeah. You can stay. We're coming back to this, but we've got some other things that we need to take care of.
House Bill 3114 requires the Department of Human Services to develop rules for prescription and monitoring of psychotropic drugs taken by children in foster care, mandates assessment by a qualified mental health professional, annual review of medications, and appropriate indicators of determining that psychotropic medications should be prescribed. The -1, I believe it's the -1 amendments that you're being at. No, I'm sorry, -3 amendment. Dated April 16th, I believe, are what's being asked to consider it, and that changes the standards for the required prescription review.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland. Good morning, colleagues. Yes, we are considering the -3s for House Bill 3114. So after the first public hearing on April 3rd, I convened a work group on April 7th with interested stakeholders, including Representative Maurer and his staff, Department of Human Services, and representatives from the Oregon Medical Association, the Oregon Psychological Association, and the Juvenile Rights Project. We discussed 6 questions, and the amendments, I won't list those questions for you in the interest of time, but the -3 amendments are an attempt to respond to the work group's discussion. I believe all the stakeholders are comfortable with the proposed changes, and so I'll walk you through them on the bill. Lines 9 through 11 are replaced, and the revisions into the -3 specify 3 things, that the required assessment. And to remind every folks, this was requiring assessment before prescription of a psychotropic med. And so what the revisions are saying is that the required assessment can be done by either a qualified mental health professional or a licensed medical professional with expertise in children's mental health. They specify that the required assessment prior to prescription applies to more than one psychotropic or any antipsychotic, and that there are exceptions in case of urgent medical need as defined by rule, and that was our attempt to get at the issue of if a child came into the system with already medications and they needed to have a prescription filled, that there would be exceptions for having that prescription filled on an urgent basis versus making them wait until the assessment. The other section in in the -3s deletes line 26 and 27. And the changes specify that the annual review, and now this is the annual review of some, if a child has been on medications, to have a review to check in on the status of those medications, that the annual review must be done by a licensed medical professional or a qualified mental health professional with prescribing authority. The problem with the original bill is we didn't clarify that the qualified mental health professional had to have prescribing authority. And also, the revisions are that the review requirement applies to a child with more than 2 prescriptions for psychotropic medications or if the child is under the age of 6 years. So after discussions with the department and other parties, we had heard testimony that more than one needed to be changed to more than 2, so that change is being made. But we also added for any medication for a child under the age of 6, there would be an annual review. So those are the changes that we are suggesting, and I urge your support and be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any quick questions?
No, Madam Chair, I just want to lend support to Representative Kotek and her staff for their efforts, and I support the amendments.
You want to move the amendment?
Madam Chair, I would like to move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3114, dated April 16, 2009.
Representative Maurer moves the Dash 3 amendments, dated 4-16-09, be amended to House Bill 3114. Any questions? Any objections? So amended. Representative Maurer.
We can't move the bill. We don't have a fiscal statement.
Oh.
We can adopt the amendment.
Okay. So we will adopt the amendments to House Bill 3114 and close the work session on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Okay. Next.
And for the interest of, just for clarity, because several of these bills are mine, I'd be happy if you set them over because I know you're in a rush. The only one that I think is easily done today in the time frame is 3384. That's that TANF housekeeping bill. So if you want to move to that one, Madam Chair, that might make the most sense for the time we have remaining.
Okay. We'll open up House Bill 3384. Representative Keeley first.
House Bill 3884, as amended with the dash.
Is that 3384?
Isn't that what I said?
No.
What did I say?
3884.
Okay, I'm sorry. House Bill 3384, with the recommended amendments, the dash one amendments, would remove the requirement that applicants for public assistance assigned to deletes the removal requirement that the applicants for public assistance would assign their state support payments to the state. It does prohibit that temporary assistance for needy families, TANF recipients, who are enrolled in school as an allowable work activity, prevents them from being disenrolled because the number of individuals receiving aid declines, and we heard testimony on that previously.
Great.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44. And that is correct. The dash ones remove the first half, which after discussion when we had the first public hearing, we learned from the Department of Justice that a bill regarding the Child Support Division had addressed this issue, which was a change in federal law. So we took out that entire section. All that is remaining is the fix around how we interpret the 1% cap for the Parents of Scholars option within the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program. If you recall, the intent has been that the 1% cap was in law to set some budget boundaries, but what has happened since we've implemented the Parents of Scholars option, it became apparent that what do we do if the caseload fluctuates and we have folks already in school? And so the intent, when we were having the redesign discussion in 2007 about TANF, was we want to keep these people in school. The department has moved forward with some rules to reflect that. This puts in statute that if indeed the 1% fluctuates and we have less spots available, but we have folks who are pursuing a 2- and 4-year program as one of the options in TANF, that they would be allowed to finish as opposed to, you know, not allowing them to have that option because they're already in the course of study. So that's what this does.
Thank you, Representative. Any quick questions? Representative Kotek? Okay. Andy, move the dash one amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendments into House Bill
3384. Representative, what is his name? Olson moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 3384, dated 4-7-09. Any questions? Any objections? So moved. And so we'll need a fiscal miss before we can move
it. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then is your intent on the other bills to then set them over as well? Because although I know we're waiting for fiscals on some of the other ones, and I'm at your disposal next week whenever you'd like to hear them.
We actually could pass 2987 today. I did receive a fiscal impact statement on those, which I have right here to pass out to you, although it is a minimal. And so that's all it says is minimal expenditure impact. And
okay.
We can go ahead and move that if you'd like.
Sure. Keeley, while I'm looking for my bill file, can you read what the bill is about?
We open the work session first officially.
Open up a work session for House Bill 2987.
And if I may, just Representative Tina Kotek for the record, House District 44 North and Northeast Portland. My staff did distribute, I believe, Hand and Groves for the Dash Ones on House Bill 2987 to recall the testimony on this. This was setting up an additional reporting program for school age programs. We'd had this long discussion about making sure we had some mechanism to track school age programs. These programs are for school-age children with a single enrichment, athletic, or social activity for fewer than 8 hours of care each week. There would be a nominal fee of $20 for recording that the Employment Department would track. The Dash Ones changed the name. The original bill had exempt tracked. We're changing it to school-age recorded because we thought that made more sense. Takes out the requirement that operators and employees enroll in the criminal history registry. That was a simplification. And it also limits the amount of information required for recording the name of the operators of the program. So the goal here is to record and track these programs that are providing school-age care as a next step in trying to provide some uniformity in those programs. It also, as you recall, the original bill that is still in there did require that these programs would be required to provide some information to parents that they are not certified licensed child care, but they are school-age programs, and these are the criteria that goes along with that designation. So. And this is a bill introduced on behalf of the Oregon Commission for Child Care.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm lost here. Are we on Dash 1?
Yes.
The Dash 1.
Okay, I don't have the Hand and Groves, but I just want to make sure I wasn't missing an amendment. Thank you.
Hey, Madam Chair, I move.
I have a question, too.
Sure. Representative Boone and then Representative Edelman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me why you took out the requirement to be listed in the criminal history check?
And if just to remind folks, this goes back to that discussion of the Employment Department currently for certified child care programs. Not only does a criminal history, kind of a background check, a typical police background check, they also do child protective services checks. They do what I would call, you know, the most robust background checks for the child care providers. There's a considerable time and expense to that, and so that's why it's the criminal history registry is the Employment Department's full-blown, doing everything, cover everything for child care providers. That was not the intent here, so that's why that deletion. But I think the Employment Department, I want to make sure I got that right.
Chair Tomei, Representative Boone, my name is Kathleen Hines. I'm the Legal and Compliance Manager with the Child Care Division. And Representative Kotek is correct. It still requires that individuals that volunteer or are employed in these organizations do go through a criminal background check of that organization's choosing, but does not require them to go through the Child Care Division's criminal history registry, which, as Representative Kotek says, is quite extensive and has a fairly significant fiscal impact.
Just a quick follow-up. I just wanted to make, we're considering lots of different bills that address people who work with children, and I think that we want to apply a uniform, everybody's either on the bus or off the bus approach as far as at least being trackable in some manner. And I understand that this isn't child care, so that's different, but that people who do work with children do have some sort of check initially so that we can keep track of them.
Madam Chair and Representative Boone, you're absolutely correct, and that's the intent of the bill, because right now these programs not tracked at all, no requirement for at least a basic background check. This is saying get a background check, pay your small fee, get registered with the state as this type of program so we at least have some tracking. Because you're absolutely right. Right now this is completely, I don't want to say unregulated, but untracked.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we going to have a problem in reference, the bills are referencing the criminal history registry, and I think it's, 2207 is going to change the name to Central Background Registry? We have a number of bills that...
Madam Chair, Representative Van Orman, that's a good eagle eye on that. My understanding is how this would work is if we pass this and that, there would be some concurrence of changes. If both were passed, the Legislative Council would take care of that if we needed to change it at that time.
It would be one of those that we get back that list all these numbers after it.
All right. Well, thank you.
No, yes. Thank you.
Thank you for asking the questions. Any further questions? Representative Cowan.
Thank you. I'm trying to make sure that I don't get confused. And we have testimony in here from Metro relating to the zoo that this bill doesn't do what they need. But if I'm remembering correctly, we have another bill that does. Is that correct?
Didn't we pass that one?
I addressed that. We have not passed that yet, but that has been agreed to by all the parties. And Mr. Tucker from Metro contacted me yesterday, and they are fine with this bill at this point and retract any negative.
Thank you. I just didn't want to have regrets later. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. My eagle eyes on this committee. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Maurer, it looks like he has a question. Yeah.
Well, Madam Chair, this is a, we're casting a wide net. I am okay with registering them. But I think we need to look long and hard because this is, of course, the proverbial camel in the tent. And the next step is clear to me that we are now going to, the next step, next session, we're going to license these people and they're going to be inspected and their fees are going to go up and a lot of these places are going to go out of business. We're going to have less access to available services. And I will support this bill, but I just wanted, I'm going to, you know, maybe I get hard-hearted after a while, but at some point you draw the line in the sand and say, no, I think we don't need to go any further.
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, I appreciate your comments and thank you for your support, even with your concerns. I'm comfortable with this as a next step because of the process the Child Care Commission went through, the series of town halls, the discussion with the community and the stakeholders about there needs to be a balanced next step. There needs to be something in place, and that's what this is a result of, this sense of let's track, let's require basic background. There has to be something in place, and I think there was agreement among the stakeholders for that. And because there was a long process, that there was, this is really a consensus document coming out of these public forums, I feel very comfortable, but I hear your concerns. But I know this has come out of some process, which is why this is not extended to preschools, because that discussion has not taken place. And I know there were some concerns about maybe unregulated preschools, but that was not discussed, not in the bill, because we want to take this as a gradual, get public input, and be careful about how we do this.
Madam Chair, I thought preschools were included with the dash ones. The child care facility less than 4 hours per week or four hours per day. On the dash one, page one, line six of the, you're deleting the 4 hour or less a day requirement, which means you are dragging in all these preschools.
Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer, my name is Heidi McGowan, Executive Officer of the Commission for Child Care. The intent of this legislation, and it, I believe, is corrected in the amendments, it is not to include preschools. It has not been the intent of the Commission for Child Care to include preschools, and we will be, as I explained last time, going out and getting feedback from that population during the next year or two.
It was crossed out.
Then,
but it should be in.
Then I couldn't support the dash
right here,
one.
45. Mm-hmm. 4 hours of this. dash.
Because it's out.
Check. Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer, line 45, I believe, is corrected to address that concern. Line 45? You don't have it. Here we go.
Page two.
Representative Van Orman is saying.
Right.
Sorry. It does correct it. I appreciate it.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Scared me for a minute.
I admit I was wrong.
It's okay. Thank you for bringing it up, though. Okay.
Please put that in the record.
So they
other questions?
They are included.
Thank you.
They're not.
Just to clarify, they are not.
We'll try to do that at a later date, but they are not included because we'll have a huge fiscal.
And Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, because that was not part of the town hall discussions that the commission facilitated, there was concern about those stakeholders have not been consulted. I would guess in the interim that will be the next step from the commission. I don't know if Heidi wants to.
Yes. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, that will be the next step of the commission to obtain feedback. The commission cannot propose any advisory changes until we've heard from those stakeholders and ensure that we're representing that population appropriately.
Follow up.
Thank you. Okay. And I agree that you're from a different agency, so that makes a difference in some sense. But we are going to require after-school programs, which are not licensed now, are not, you know, have the agency has no authority over them. It's just any parent takes your kid to a after-school program, you're on your own, caveat emptor. But this does now, this bill captures them. But we still do not capture the preschool under 4 hours a day, which could be operated by a pedophile. And we heard testimony to this. And we're not addressing that now in this bill or any bill. Am I getting that right?
Chair Tomei and Representative Boone, you are correct. The Commission for Child Care held a lengthy discussion about that once this concept was proposed, but did not feel, without having gone out and doing our due diligence of obtaining feedback from the community, we could not propose an advisory change. It was a tough discussion, but you are correct. It does not include preschools, only school-age programs as at this point.
Colleagues, if we need a lot more discussion on this, then I will have to excuse Representative Olson. I'd like to take a vote on this. Do we have enough information that we can vote on this? Representative Huffman?
We do, but I just want to go on the record. I may change my mind later, but because of everything that Representative Maurer said, I'm not going to support it this morning.
I'm sorry. I am supportive.
I know.
I am supportive. And my concern is that, in fact, we haven't consulted with this group because I had one very irate preschool who I, in fact, trust, have a great deal of confidence in, and she said, time out. And so that was my pause. But I also understand when you see the hand-painted sign, you know, Joe's preschool is also somewhat of a concern. But, you know, this is about getting consensus in this community, or else you're going to have you're going to be very disruptive to people's daily lives.
Madam Chair, I understood, Representative.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Okay, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2987, dated March 26, 2009.
Representative Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2097, dated March 26, 2009. Any questions? Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I do have some discussion. That's really concerning to me, because if the cost is only $3 to $4, why are we not including this? It seems like a small price to pay for people who have these businesses. They're small preschools, I imagine. I would imagine. And if there's no oversight over them, we did have this discussion, and I was under the impression that this was going to be included in one or more of the bills that we've been considering.
Chair Tomei, Representative Boone, right now under our existing statute, we don't regulate preschools that operate 4 hours or less a day, and therefore we don't have authority to do criminal background checks on those individuals, because we only have authority to do criminal background checks on those people that are identified as subject individuals in the statute, and that is related to child care. So that's why. And we also, the $3 charge is subsidized by the funding that we get, because as our administrator Tom Olson has testified, we subsidize the cost of that criminal background check because of the importance of doing those on child care providers. Again, those child care providers that were statutorily given the authority to regulate.
So actually the cost is a lot more than $3.
It is, yes.
$90.
Yes, $90.
And Chair Tomei, Representative Boone, I can't really respond to the additional question about preschools being included in the bill or not, but I did want to respond to your question about the criminal history background check.
And Representative Boone, I think if you have any of your priority bills left, I would be glad to have a hearing.
Okay,
if you
because
to do that.
Well, it looks like they were in there, but they got crossed out, and that's my concern. Because I when I saw them in, I thought, okay, good, they're there.
And as I said, I would be happy to have a hearing on a
well,
priority.
Well, how can we do that? Today's the last day to do a priority bill.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay. We'll do it in February. We'll do it in February.
Representative Tomei and Chair Tomei, Representative Boone, I think there was a little misunderstanding earlier as we testified. They were never included in this bill because it just includes a current definition of child care facility that is in our statute that excludes child preschools. And the language was misstated, and it said preschool that operates for more than 4 hours a day. And it should have said 4 hours or less a day. So it was really a technical cleanup, not a complete change in regards to preschools.
We're going to move on. Representative Olson moved the -1 amendment to House Bill 2987, dated March 26, 2009. Any objection? Seeing none, one objection. Okay.
Two
objections. Okay. So then we have to take a roll call.
You have to vote.
Representative Van Orman.
Aye.
Representative Maurer.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
No.
Representative Freeman.
No.
Representative Nimrod.
Aye.
Representative Callen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
No.
Chair Tomei.
Aye. Having received the required majority, the -1 amendment to House Bill 2987 is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2987 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2987 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? All right. Would you call the roll, please, Zach?
Representative Callen.
Aye.
Representative
Dimbra. Aye.
Representative Freeman.
No.
Representative Huffman.
No.
Representative Mallon.
Aye.
Representative Van Orman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
No.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye. Having received the required majority, House Bill 2987 has passed and will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Would anybody like to volunteer to carry this? Representative Van Orman?
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Representative
Van
Orman
will carry. And Representative Representative Kotek will carry.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So I'll close the work session on House Bill 2987. Thank you. For those of you who stayed, thank you. And we're going to reopen House Bill 3471.
How many do we have leaving?
I've got to go.
You've got to go? Are you staying, Representative?
How much longer are we talking?
I don't know. I just want to know
maybe
if we need to
five
open.
Minutes.
I
guess.
Five
thank you. Okay. Great. And so we had heard your daughter, and so if you have just a few minutes more, we would appreciate hearing that.
Well, my name is Yvonne Cram. I'm the grandmother of the child. I don't want sympathy. I want understanding. I want people to understand that the loss of my granddaughter should awaken us that this is not safe. According to this, the bill, 3471, what they are saying happened already, like the Mexican consulate did a home study, supposedly. He went to the court, and he said that he recommended that she be placed there with a relative. When we went outside, because I had known the family already, I asked the person from the consulate, did you go there? Did you actually physically go there? And he said, yes, I had been there. And I said, would you allow a child of yours to live there? And he said, no, I wouldn't allow my dog to live there. But he had recommended in the court that my granddaughter be sent there. I just don't want to see any more kids, for this to happen to any more children at all. This was not everything that they have said that they're newly implemented, they've already done, and it failed, and it's not going to work. I want her to have died for a reason, and I really believe that her rights, she was a special needs child. She had a thyroid that totally didn't function. She should have never been placed outside the United States. And just because a child is healthy doesn't mean we should dump them somewhere and forget that they're alive. After a year, these children can turn into sex trafficked children. Nobody will know. Nobody will know. And nobody will care. Not that we don't still love. I mean, if she was still alive, I'd still think about her every day, and I still think about her every day now that she's dead. But the fact of the matter is, the existing family, regardless of how bad they were, according, you know, to whatever department took them and decided to play God with their lives, that child is still going to be cared about, regardless, forever, and regardless of what happens to them. Anyway, I have something to read that is not going to fit into a couple minutes.
Do you know what? You can give it to Zach, and he will make copies, this young man, and pass it out to the whole committee.
I don't have time to type it up or anything. I just really want to say that as a traveler, when we go to foreign countries, we are, as passport holders, to tell the U.S. Embassy that we are there, and they don't tell the U.S. Embassy in these countries that that child is there. When they notified us that she was dead a month after they buried her in Mexico, they did not tell us, or they did not give us any proof that she was dead. They gave us an unsigned death certificate in Spanish.
In English.
Well, fine, but it wasn't signed. So how do you come to terms with that? I mean, it took us a year to get one from the U.S. Embassy, who was shocked to hear she was there and disgusted that they weren't informed. The consulate is involved, and they are they won't take responsibility. When we found out that she died, we went to the consulate, and we talked to them. And he said, well, as soon as she's placed there, it's out of my hands. I have no part of this.
But I think there's nothing that we can do to turn back the
well.
The,
I know.
The
and
clock
I
to make
I think
sure
that
they didn't
learn from the mistake that what they're saying that they're changing is the same thing that they had before. That's what I'm saying, and they can learn. They can learn from the mistake. It's not going to work. It didn't work before. It's the same thing. I'm serious. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I think the only thing that could even slightly correct this is the state discontinuing unsafe placements. If you take a child from their mother from medical neglect when she's asking for help, how do you send her to a country where they can't supply her medicine? Hello?
Again, we are so sorry your loss. And we're hoping that changes in Oregon law will help facilitate future situations so that this never happens to another child.
Well, due diligence did not appear to have happened on the side of the border. I will say that they bent over backwards to give preferential treatment to the father of this child. They denied me on grounds that totally are not even true. To be a potential person, I took the foster parent classes, I took the adoptive classes. It was not 10 hours long, as is required in a foreign country for their training to become an adoptive parent. It was a lot more. And I took that without their permission.
And please feel free to send us written information. If this isn't typed up now, feel free.
Yeah,
either Zach or Keely will give you information so you can send it to us.
Can I type that and send that somewhere?
Absolutely, you can.
I just wanted to say, because I know the 60-day moratorium is almost over, and because my daughter was she had medical needs. Somebody I know lost a baby to the state a while back, and they've got 5 kids in the pipeline. Is there any way we can find out if it's not a baby who eats through a tube in their stomach that is going? Because I think that they send kids with needs because it takes out of what the taxpayers have to pay. And if they are, they're sentencing that child to death. It scares me. I love her. I mean, I didn't like her mom, but I talked to her because I knew the baby needed help, you know? And I was the one that reported her, and I don't want to be a part of it if they're killing her.
There's no way to find
her. I never trusted DHS to report anything, but that baby needed help. And I don't want to find out 3 years down the road that they sent her to Mexico and she was killed because of the phone call I made.
Will this bill not passing today, or will it?
We'll carry it over until next week, and we'll have a work session. As you saw today, when we
did
have
you
a
say
work
Monday of next week? Because we had had a rally scheduled for
we're
Monday,
protesting
and
outside.
I believe that's why this hit this room today.
I can't guarantee that. As you can see, we had other bills that were scheduled to hear. So that
how will we know when it is?
We will certainly notify you.
Okay. And where do I submit?
Madam Chair.
Where do I submit my writing?
It is on the agenda for Monday, but as the Chair has said, we had an extensive number of bills that we did not get to today, and so we'll be doing all those. But it is posted to Monday's agenda.
Do you know what time?
It would be always at 8 in the morning.
Monday's 8:30.
Thank you. Yeah.
Right. Perhaps you could speak with these folks after the hearing to explain the process of that we can't always get the paperwork that we need, and we don't know until that day whether they're going
to
be heard or not.
Thank you, Representative. That's a great idea. Okay, is there anybody that we missed who wished to speak today while we still have a few people left in our committee? Seeing not, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3471 and close House Committee.
Wait.
So we're hearing over House Bill 2051, 3353, 2868, 3065, and 2726. Thank you, Committee, for staying, and I close the House Committee on Human Services.